Thank you, Mimi. Our last speaker for this session is Greg Stuckey. I've had the pleasure to work with Greg for 22 years, and you work with someone for 22 years. You think you know everything about them, and I learned something brand new this morning. I asked Greg, what's your favorite rock and roll group? I couldn't believe it. Huey, Louie, and the News. So, anyways, Greg Stuckey.
Everybody starts singing, right? Might as well face it. All right, so really good examples. We had one example of using emojis, priming, a good example of how to get at some of those System 1 component pieces, the fast, slow thinking, getting at System 1, System 2 thinking. I'm going to give you a couple more examples on techniques that you can use, and these are going to be, instead of quantitative-oriented techniques, these are going to be more qualitative-oriented techniques. So interactive techniques that you can use with people face-to-face. You could use them online, too, I suppose, but primarily face-to-face interactions. But the key here is that I don't want to just show you the techniques because the techniques are cool, and they're fun, and you'll all have fun with them if you ever try them. But what I want to show you is that they're important because they're connected to one very specific, most important thing that we all do, which is identify the benefit the product that is supposed to deliver, and then find out what are the sensory properties that drive that benefit forward. Because as much as you like something, if it doesn't connect with what you believe it's supposed to be doing for you, you're not going to buy it again. You're going to think the product failed. Okay? You're not going to change your behavior. And at the end of the day, that's really what we're doing. We introduce new products into people's lives. We need to change their behavior. We need to change from what they're doing today to doing something new. What they're choosing today to choosing something new. So we've been talking for a while, so now you got to start paying attention. Okay, I'm going to do some quick exercise for you, and I need you to shout out what you think this image is. Tell me what this is. Juice box. How do you know there's juice in there? Okay, just asking. Okay, next one. Shout it out. What is this? Milk carton. All right. How do you know there's milk in there? You don't? You know. Why? Right? So these are things that are implicitly stored in your brain, right? It's not like I got chocolate milk from this side or white milk from this side, right? We just got, bam, milk carton. Right away, we implicitly know these things. This is true about all the foods you eat. This is true about all your experience. Those things are in your brain. If I can give you a stimulus, that brings it to mind right away, and you can go from trying to figure out how to talk about it to having it top of mind, easily able to think about it. Okay, so if I do something a little more complex, I'll give you an exercise, and I say, okay, I'm going to now tie this to a benefit. In the next picture, there is one product in this picture that is all natural. And so I'm going to walk through without shouting. How many people think it's the green bottle, all natural? How many people think it's the red bottle, all natural? The clear or the white bottle, all natural? Okay. Yellow bottle, all natural, a couple. Okay, if you looked around, nobody picked green or red. Why do you think that is? There's an association, there's an implicit association in your brain between what you're seeing as a color here and what's in the bottle. Now, a little psychological play as well on that. I just showed you a milk carton, which made you all think about milk, which made you also pick white. So just to tell you, the priming, cueing, they all go hand in glove. They work very well. They're System 1 memories. Okay? So now you've all experienced it. You know it's happening. Now you need to control that in your research, or you need to leverage that in your research to understand how these things are happening. So if I'm building an all-natural product and I have the ability to pick one of these, in this particular setting, and I knew I had you in the right context, I would better understand how to build this particular product. What are some of the sensory properties that work and don't work? So all these things are tied. They're in our heads. And if you just ask a person, sit down face to face and say, hey, tell me why white works for you. Why does clear work for you? You're going to have a really hard time getting that answer. if you instead take some behavioral approaches and get them to do activities, it brings all those things to mind, and it makes it really easy for people to talk about it. And so just to make it very simple for people, what we like to do is identify what's the list of cues, what are the lists of those sensory attributes that you should leverage that are helpful in delivering against that benefit, and what are the cues that are bad that you should be avoiding as you build those products. Okay? So there's a couple techniques we use, one very system one oriented, and we call this sparking the senses. It's something that actually lots of people do. Liz, you talked about it as well. Build yourself a sensory kit, touches all five of the senses, right? Grab some cards, do visual exercises with people, smells, these are the Scentsy. Anybody use Scentsy candles? Scentsy candles? Go on eBay, you get like 1,000 of them for $15. So and of course aromas cue memories, right? So it works really well. Fabrics. Put fabrics inside an envelope so people can't see them, right? Then it's only the sense of touch. You can isolate the sense of touch. Build your own flavor or taste or profile kit based on anything you do. Anybody doing descriptive work ever do anything like this before, right? It's a technique we have standard in the field, but we seldom use it with our consumer panels. Same thing with sound. How many people actually use sound in any of their research? Anybody? Just a couple of hands. How many people think sound might be important to the foods they're eating? Yeah, so there's a little dichotomy there, right? Some opportunities. So the technique's pretty straightforward, and I'll give you an example with energy bars here. If we're looking at developing an energy bar, we'll bring in a group of people, like 18 target consumers, gender balanced, et cetera, so forth, whatever you want for your control design, but recruited specifically based on their core motivation. And that's the most important part. In this particular study, people who ate energy bars for the purpose of having sustained energy. You got to get the benefit right when you're doing your recruit, and then that way they've told a story that matches the benefit you're recruiting for. Okay? Do a homework exercise to write a story about, in this case, a very busy, energizing moment. We wanted that specific moment. When they come in, you do a deep dive with them, have them retell their stories so that's fresh in their mind, right? Just like I told you, one of those pictures had an all-natural product in it. You got to get them to tell their story, be in their own context, for make it matter to them. Then do a cue discovery. So all those different sparking the senses exercises, give them a fabric to hold and say, find a fabric or touch a fabric and tell me if it is or isn't energizing. Just yes or no. Identify, yes or no. And then place them with real products, you know, bring in real experiences with different types of products that they actually use. So you get things like, with your conversation with people, you get to get more rich, deep information about the cues that are actually being leveraged. So you're using one sense as a metaphor for what the product can deliver for you. So this is the kind of thing we get. Like, this piece of fabric, it's rough and bumpy. Notice some attributes there? Might be helpful when you're developing an energy bar, right? Instead of smooth, you want rough and bumpy, right? It's earthy, it's complicated. Complicated. Gee, maybe I might want a lot of different ingredients. I might want to have some visual textures, et cetera, so forth. Right? Definitely not white in this case. Okay? So as you do this across a whole group of people and you do this iteratively through all the different senses, you can uncover a big list of cues that you want to leverage and cues that you want to avoid. And this is just a subset of the list, but you can see that they're often dichotomies, right? So you get things like you want complex visualization. You want to be able to see whole pieces. You want a dull or muted tone. You want nutty, grainy protein flavors and protein aromas when you open the package. You want a crunch. You could also look at like heavy, chewy, rough, tingly. Tingly was one of my favorites. So in this study, we were working with a research chef, and in a lot of our research, having that research chef there, because they're that first person who puts together some possible formulas for energy bars. And she got really, really excited. Tingly, tingly is amazing. I'm like, well, how do you make a food tingly? She's like, paprika. I was like, paprika in an energy bar? She says, well, at low enough quantities, you can't taste the flavor, but it tingles. I'm like, oh, that's amazing. So all of a sudden, because now we have this set of possible cues that we know cue energy, somebody who's familiar with that product line, like your research staff, can come up with new creative ways to put together those sensory cues that are subconscious that are driving that perception that that product's actually delivering on the benefit. And then making sure you avoid some things, like simple things like knife cut edges, right? Why would that not cue energy? Not really sure, but there's some past history in a lot of people's minds that show that if it looks like it was cut with a machine, it's not going to be as filling or fulfilling. So understanding some things that you might not quite understand all the pieces and parts, but know that you've got a trend to avoid. And then for product developers, if you put together, remember I said put together a set of in-market products that may visualize or help you understand what those profiles are, this is now an R&D person. So if I have something that I said, well, it's got to be thin versus rough, or I have to have low protein taste versus high protein taste, how does the developer know what that is? Where do they start with levels? We can do descriptive work, you can do a lot of different things, but having real in-market products, you can hand them and go, here's a high one and here's a low one. It's got to be somewhere in between this, here in this area. So how it helped in this particular case with the development chef. Development chef says, well, and this was Catherine Felix that we were working with, and she said, hey, normally what I would do without a list of cues like this, I would just survey what's on the market, I'd apply creativity, I'd get new information, I'd make a bunch of samples, taste them, just iterate with a bunch of folks, pick some gold standards and go forward. And she says, now I have this list. Number one, my creativity's changing because now I'm developing because I know a certain sensory cue is going to deliver a benefit. And I say, okay, well, I do all those above things, but then where's the missing spaces? What cues are on this list that none of the competitors have? What's missing? How can I be differentiated on the market and change people's behavior based on something that I can deliver nobody else can? And again, what cues are going to then be more creative, have more fun with this product? What things can we source or do better because we have a technology? Or what things might take a little bit longer to develop or build? So that's one way of doing system one, bringing a sensory kit in and triggering those. Now, system three, now this is also using sensory memories, but this is trying to get into the future. So there's a technique called, or an approach that is called Lego Serious Play. Anybody familiar with Lego Serious Play? Okay, just a couple people. It is a business development and business innovation process that Lego built, and they train moderators to become proficient in this particular technique. And it's designed to be a business type technique for you to understand your strategies better. Karen Lynch, who's runs our qualitative group, took this technique and built a consumer-facing version of this. And the idea here is that you create hoped-for experiences. And so just like a sensory kit helps you visualize things, Legos, again, very tactile, very activity-oriented, and you can build three-dimensional models of what you think the future looks like. And the cool thing about Legos is that they allow you to do everything. And nothing that you build is exactly what you're going to have at the end of the day, right? Because you can't eat Legos if you're doing that. You can't apply Legos like a cream if you're doing skincare. It works very simple. Consumers work with Legos on the table. They're given a specific directive. So they're asked to envision a future, use your memory to envision a future, and then build a model of what that future is. And as they build that model, they build pieces and parts into that model that have meaning to them, that have value to them. And so you really understand what's that underlying connection between what they want their experience to be and what the design elements that go into that experience are. So you think with your fingers, right? You think with a different part of your body and you express those pieces. So Karen worked with Beiersdorf to help build a new understanding of some of the key elements. In this particular one, they were studying on what does value mean? So it's a reasonably abstract concept, but if I'm building a skincare product based around value, what should some of the properties of that product be? How do I know that it's delivering value, right? So to accomplish that, instead of just looking at, well, what's value mean implicitly to people today, they said, well, what could value mean in the future? What could I create in the future? So we're asking consumers then, build a model based on what you think true value means. And consumers build all types of models. And as they process these models, they're using their memories of what they've experienced in the past that they thought were value products or hoped were value products to build what they think a value product looks like in the future. Okay? Then the client team, Beiersdorf, in the background, took all that knowledge of what they saw the consumers do and build, and they did the same thing. They said, okay, how can we as a company, because now they're bringing their company perspective. They know what ingredients they have. They know what processing they have. They know what marketing plans they have. They're starting to now build their models based on how can they take those sensory cues, how can they take those expressions of experience and put that all together into a cohesive system. So, for instance, in this case, consumers were really able to imagine their future value offering. They were able to provide examples for the company of how they might be able to deliver upon that. And then the conversation created an insight or uncovered a new insight of what true value would mean. And then Beiersdorf takes that insight and then uses that as the focus point for their ideation session. Again, with that list of things they know are positive and the list of things they know are negative. And so they're building towards things that they believe are going to help differentiate, and they're taking away from things or staying away from things that they know are going to be avoid situations. And a lot of the avoid things end up being essentially your competitor's Achilles heels, right? It's things that people experience already that they don't that don't work for them. So understanding how all this comes together, it takes it from just understanding the sensory components to making sensory exceptionally valuable for the business, because now your sensory properties of your food are directly tied to in-market performance. So it takes sensory from being an evaluative piece of a business to the centerpiece as to why you have differentiated value on market. And that takes sensory to a whole new level in a lot of companies. And that's where, as a group, we need to get sensory to back to that place, right? And if you're not at that place already in your company, that's really an important piece, because if you're doing sensory just as quality control only in your company, not that it isn't super valuable in that spot, but if that's the only thing you're doing, then you're missing out on the true market value of sensory in our field. Okay. So system one, using sensory to trigger those implicit memories. System three, creating a future memory and leveraging those things forward. All right, thank you.